hit me with your horns and make that money.
This is the Ty Butler Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Oh. I like this. I like this type of energy on a Sunday morning. We getting it popping. Ty Butler, little DJ Cool here. We're going to 12 o'clock. Larry Hardesty is going to take it to 2:30. We got the Rangers pregame show popping off. And face-off set for 3 o'clock. This is a fun time in New York. You got the Knicks winning game one last night or yesterday evening at home. Despite Brunson not having his best performance, shout out to Deuce McBride and, you know, Josh Hart, Mitchell Robinson. OG hits a big shot late, so the Knicks get a big win in game one of that series. The Rangers face off today against a Capitals team that, I mean, barely made the playoffs, finished with a goal differential of minus 37. And I understand they split the season series, but I know fans can't think this way. Players can't think this way. I'm looking at it from like a wide-eyed lens because, you know, I root for the Rangers, but I don't consider myself to be like really dialed into, you know, every single game they play and a hardcore fan. Their playoff run starts next round. Like this series, they're not going to lose this series. They can't lose this series. They should not lose this series. It would be an epic failure. And I get it happens in hockey. Look at the Bruins last year. Part of the allure of the hockey postseason is the electricity. It's riveting. The anxiety levels. And you can't always anticipate who's going to win. There's just so much parity in the sport. That's just how hockey works. Like, the upsets happen all the time. I just think that this Rangers team is so good. And the Rangers team that we've watched all season long is just like so clearly the best in hockey. And this is a really good opponent for them as far as just being able to dust them in about five or six games. And then your playoff run really starts next round. I like the fact that they've been locked in, playing with that sense of urgency. They still had a lot to play for as far as not locking up the number one seed. So you're not getting into a situation where you're going up against an inferior team that's coming in with more momentum than you. The Rangers ended the season playing pretty well. I just think that this series is lopsided. That's a bad road team. You're a great home team. You're better in every facet. So the President's Cup, there's the superstitions surrounding that. But as someone reminded me just now, back in 94, they won the cup and had the President's Trophy. So, you know, that worked out then. But you just look at the fact that history tells us there's a little bit of shady business going on here. There's some bad juju when you win the President's Cup. So hopefully that those, you know, demons can be exercised. You get bounced in round one last year. You had to make a move. This head coach comes in, hopefully ushering them into a new level of prosperity where they can finally realize their potential and make a deep playoff run. So I think that starts the next round, and I get that, you know, that's, you know, not how the fans should think, but, you know, as much as I'm looking forward to this series, I think it's going to be a pretty easy one. As far as the Yankees and the Mets are concerned, we talked about them last hour. The Yankees going for the series win today against the Rays. Then they'll play four at home against Oakland. The Mets have won 12 of 15 games, so they go for the series sweep in L.A. against the Dodgers, the team that's underachieved so far to start the year. And then they'll be in San Francisco to take on the Giants. We talked some Jets as well. I don't want them to take Brock Bowers. That's a luxury move for a team that's not in position to make a luxury pick. I thought Connor Rogers hit the nail on the head with this great analogy when he says it's the dessert before vegetables. Like, come on. Like, Brock Bowers can be an elite player. It's a shiny toy. It would be the sexy pick. It would excite everyone. That's not the right move. That offensive line I watched last year did not get rebuilt in just one free agency period. Continue to add to that, and that'll make me, and I think most Jet fans who are logical, who are rational, who are understanding of the magnitude of what next season is going to be and how it's predicated on you having a representable offensive line, they understand and can agree. Brock Bowers, while that's the, you know, the pick that would be exciting, that feels a little Saquon Barkley-ish. And, you know, that did not work out for the Giants. 800-919-3776. Subi's in Midtown, wants to chime in. What's up, Subi?
Hey, Ty, I wanted you to know your opinion if the Knicks can emulate the Heat from a couple of years ago or last year with the three-point shooting being off the charts. And then if the Suns is a caution because Devin Booker didn't play well, you know, everyone's been asking him to be in New York next year. It's like a cautionary tale because he only scored like 15 points. And then they're going to be disappointing again in the playoffs. So that's all I got to say.
I don't look at yesterday's game in Minnesota, and I appreciate the call, Subi, as you know something that's indicative of how the rest of that series is going to play out. Devin Booker was off. Where Bradley Beal didn't show up. It was really Kevin Durant against the entire Minnesota Timberwolves team. And shout out to Anthony Edwards, who played really well in that game. That was his coming out party. He scored 33 points. He's chirping at KD and Booker. That was his, you know, that was a nice moment for him. It was great for the NBA. One of the bright stars of the league, who was in contention for being the face of the NBA, having, you know, that big playoff moment. But I think that's still going to be a series that goes like seven games. I expect the Suns to come back out tomorrow and win. Devin Booker didn't play well. If you're a Knicks fan, should you want your team to trade for Devin Booker? Absolutely. That would be the perfect complimentary piece for a guy like Jalen Brunson. As far as your first question, can they go on a run like the Heat did last year? I guess it's possible. I just don't... Like, I was not in on Boston, but it's just, this is breaking right for the Celtics. You know, Giannis is hurt and Embiid's hurt. I just don't think the Knicks have enough firepower to beat the Celtics, even though they were chanting last night. Do we have that? They were chanting last night. We want Boston. I mean, man. So you win one game against the Sixers and you're already looking not just next round. You're looking past next round, past the Bucks and the Pacers, and you want the Celtics. I love the energy. I love the buzz, but I don't know if that's the right move. D in Queens. What's up, D?
What's up, man? First of all, the guy who was talking about Aaron Judge, he's the reason people don't want to come to New York because he sounded like an idiot. Like, bro, what?
He was asking the questions. I don't want to rip him too much, and he sounded like a nice guy,
care.
Ryan. Ryan sounds like a nice guy, but yeah, come on, man, you missed the mark with that one.
Hey, let's not talk about the Jets. That's just negativity. Like, seriously, you don't need that on this Sunday. Let's not even talk about the Jets at all. Like, no, okay, seriously.
4 days away, man. You got the draft 4 days away, but I hear you. What you want to say about Joel Embiid?
Oh, I was talking about the Knicks. The Knicks, if they won't get to, they win in the series. And we've seen this with Blake Griffin. We've seen this with Derrick Rose. Like, Giannis is sitting out for a reason. Like, bro, he's going to end his career basically in 2 years playing in this series. Mm. Like, he has no business playing. Okay? And it's like, I want to sit. And for this one series, I'm a Knicks fan because I really want Philly to lose. Really want them to lose for various reasons.
What team do you root for?
That's all. You know who's my favorite, too.
You're a James Harden guy. So that's why... Oh, come on. Hey, worry about your Clippers today. With no Kawhi Leonard, they're going to get bounced in round one, and now they're all breaking up.
Oh, you mean like how they beat Dallas before without Kawhi? Oh, okay, whatever, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, when Luka was younger and didn't have Kyrie Irving alongside him and didn't have Gafford
By the way, Kyrie has not won without LeBron, and then there's a certain player that the Clippers signed on the last day of the season that everybody's sleeping on, who is kind of what they needed since they traded for James Harden. But I'll let y'all talk. It's going to be the Clippers, and it's going to be the final four for me is probably going to be the Knicks in Boston, the Clippers in Denver.
The Clippers are going home in round one, and we'll say bye-bye to this whole, you know, taking over L.A. Like, it's Kawhi and Paul George taking over L.A. from the Lakers. Now, this is going to be the last series. It's going to be the last series those two guys play, and I appreciate the call, D. I got to run. Pat O'Keefe's going to join us next, but that's going to be the last series that we see of that, you know, big, bad Clippers team that they formed back in, what was that, 2020. That blew a 3-1 lead and then got to one conference finals, but it's done nothing since. And yeah, Kawhi's got the extension, but Paul George will be gone, Harden will be gone, Russell Westbrook will be gone, and then it'll be the same old Clippers, the Clippers we've always known them to be. Coming up next, Pat O'Keefe, right here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Ty Butler Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, Ty Butler going until noon right here on 98.7 ESPN. Oh, what a pleasure it is to be joined by my good buddy Pat O'Keefe, who's Been on the call for a lot of the Knicks games this year and will be on the call for the postseason games along with Monica McNutt, Pat O'Keefe. How you doing today, my man?
Morning, Ty. Doing well after the excitement of last night at Madison Square Garden as the Knicks cut off. Everything's good.
So, look, I don't want to put you in a position where you got to, you know, render a series over because you still have to call these games, but I'm going to put my perspective out there, and then I want you to just tell me whether or not I'm off on it. So I look at last night's game, right, and I'm thinking to myself, so that's the bad Brunson game where he didn't play well. Embiid and Maxey combined for 64 points. You had Dante DiVincenzo not play well. Everything really went right for the Sixers except the fact that they lost the game. Because of that, I don't see a path to them winning this series. How do you feel about that perspective?
You know, it's a valid point. All of the points that you make are valid. You know, the thing is, though, this time of year is funky, right? So I would never declare a series over after one game. But that being said, the status of Joel Embiid for tomorrow night's game two and the rest of the series is paramount. That's the biggest storyline hovering over this entire series that could swing it one way or the other. I got to say, and you and I have spoken basketball both on the air and off for many years, Embiid has never been my favorite guy, and I'm not alone in that assessment of him. That being said, what he did last night was incredibly impressive. When he went down late in the second quarter, and then Monica and I are coming back to start the third quarter, and we see him walking towards the scorer's table and out onto the floor. I couldn't believe it. I thought he was done, and I thought he may have been done for the rest of the series. So credit to him for helping keep his team in that game last night. But, yeah, you're right. The bad Brunson game, as you said, statistically it was, but I don't put that all on Brunson. Kelly Oubre is a really, really tough matchup for him. Nick Nurse has obviously decided that he likes to guard Brunson with taller guys. When Oubre wasn't on Brunson last night, it was Nico Batum who was giving him some problems. So, yeah, Brunson missed several shots that he normally makes. He was on that great 10-game heater to finish off the regular season. But I give a lot of the credit for his performance last night to what Philly did defensively.
Yeah, and on Embiid, I came away the same with the same feeling you had. I was impressed, man. This guy obviously has a checkered postseason resume. We remember what happened last year, and he's never been past round two. And we hold MVPs to a higher standard than that. But watching him go down the way that he did, I was actually texting with someone who was standing in the tunnel. And Embiid walks by him. He said, and the person I'm texting said that the way Embiid looked, like you could see it in his eyes, he knew it was over. Like he knew it was done. So this person was very shocked to see him come back on the floor and battle the way that he did. But clearly he's compromised. So I just don't know how much of a chance Philly has the rest of the series. Deuce McBride, man, what a fascinating, impressive story this is. Because he started the year not really part of the Knick rotation. Then once quickly and R.J. Barrett get traded, like one of the biggest conversations was, well, who's going to be the backup point guard for the Knicks? They don't have one. And lo and behold, they actually do, and he played the best game of his career in the postseason in game one in this game against the Sixers. Deuce McBride came up big yesterday. I mean, he's getting after it defensively, but the shot making is incredible. And this is just one of the best stories of the season for the Knicks.
Well, he was the biggest difference in that game last night because the Knicks were reeling in the first quarter. They're down by 13 points, and McBride, along with Bogdanovich scoring-wise off the bench, and then Mitchell Robinson with his rebounding and energy off the bench, those three players split that entire game in the second quarter and helped the Knicks take a 12-point lead into halftime. And the role that McBride finds himself in right now, look, when he was starting for that long stretch of time when OG Anunoby was out for the second time after he came back for the three games and went out again. McBride then moved into the starting lineup. He had the career-high 29-point game on the road at Golden State. And I spoke with a basketball scout, and he told me that when you don't have to look over your shoulder and you know you have to be out there for 38 to 44 minutes per game, it's a lot easier to feel comfortable and quote-unquote find your shot. And McBride did that. He took advantage of the opportunity that was afforded to him, and he played great during that stretch. But when he went to the bench, much more difficult to do because you have to be on from the very beginning. If you miss your first one or two shots, especially at this point in the season, with this coach and Tom Thibodeau, we know, likes to rely heavily on his starters. So if he goes to the bench and the bench doesn't look like it has it right away, finds himself in. He came out last night, hit his first 4 3-pointers, and was just, like I said, the biggest difference in that game.
All right, Pat O'Keefe on the line with us. So you've watched this team all season long, and I just thought that it was very disrespectful, feels strong, but it was silly for anyone to really suggest that they should throw that last game on Sunday just because they wanted a more favorable matchup. I just felt like it's the antithesis of everything we've come to love and learn, or to come to learn and love about this team, and it's that they take the floor every single game believing they can beat anyone. They do it with heart, they do it with hustle, they do it with effort. So I'm glad that they played with that urgency, and I think that actually sent the right message, not just to the fans, but to their teammates, that they can beat anyone. So now you kind of look at, I don't want to look past the Sixers, but with everything going on with Giannis and the Bucks and then the Pacers, like, there's a path to this team, you know, possibly getting to the conference finals.
Well, if you know this head coach and the two most important people in the franchise, Ty, obviously Tom Thibodeau and Jalen Brunson, and if you were to suggest that they should go easy in that last game for a more favorable matchup, then you just haven't been paying attention to this Knicks team this season, because Thibodeau is not wired that way. And Jalen Brunson is not wired that way. And because they're not wired that way, the rest of the team isn't wired that way. So that was never even, it was a talking point, but it was never even in contention. And you're right. They handled it the right way. They handled it the only way you would expect them to. And if they get past Philadelphia in this first round, then obviously that decision pays off in spades, because then you have, what did you gain by beating Chicago? What you gained was you still avoided Boston in a potential second-round series, and now you would also have home court advantage for round number two with a chance to get to the conference finals for the first time in 20-plus years.
So were you and Monica McNutt after the game out there with all the Knicks fans chanting, "We want Boston"? I felt like I heard your voice.
Did you?
I felt like it kind of bled through.
Listen, I know you like to go on these little crusades against the Knicks fans, and I've been listening to the show this morning. Terrific job as always, by the way.
Thank you, man.
We want Boston to me means we want to go to the conference finals.
Aww.
They can't face Boston until they get to the conference
finals.
I hear we want Boston, I would make what?
So either Joe Biden or Donald Trump, they need to hire you to be a campaign manager, because you would make an excellent politician, man. The way you put the spin on that.
We want the conference finals.
Oh, man. The way you put the spin on that is awesome. Well, you know, you've done an excellent job, man. It's been great listening to you. I don't know if you got a chance to hear this morning. Courtney Cronin was filling in on for Peter Burns, and they played the Josh Hart highlight that you had. That was a great call, my man.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that. I mean, I think more of the credit probably should go to Josh Hart.
Nah, I think it goes to
for
you.
Allowing the highlight to be called.
No. I think it's you, man. When we show the highlight, it should actually just be, we shouldn't even look at the shot. We should just look at you calling it. I think that's more of a highlight than the actual shot. Before you get out of here.
You know, Monica does have the camera in the booth, as we know.
She does.
Media. She does a good job with
She does. Before we get you out of here, just a quick thought on the Rangers, because they got game one today. It's easy for me to say this because, you know, I'm not like a diehard fan, and obviously I'm not a player in the locker room. I think their playoff run starts in round two. I don't see Washington as having, you know, too much of a chance to beat them. As far as, like, just projecting forward, the Rangers, at the very least, have to get where or this season is fair. Is it the second round? Is it the conference finals? Like, what's the floor for this team in order for us not to say that this season was a failure?
You know, I, along with Giannis Antetokounmpo, don't necessarily like the word failure.
Oh, man.
Let's go with the word disappointment. If they lose this first round series to the Capitals, obviously, I think that's a grave disappointment. There's no other way you could place that. But look, let's project to a potential second-round series. The Carolina Hurricanes are a team that the Rangers, despite their historic regular season, the Rangers weren't actually able to officially eliminate the Hurricanes from contention for the division title until game number 82. So if you win the first round, you lose a tough, hard-fought seven-game series in round number two to the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, it's obviously a disappointment. That's certainly not a failure. You know, if you lose a second-round series to the Islanders, especially considering the local rivalry of the two teams, that's certainly a different story. So, you know, get past the first round, see how it all unfolds. The excitement, though, in that building last night, and you know our producer for both Knicks and Rangers radio broadcasts, Ray Santiago, and I looked over next to him at one point last night, and I said, I can't believe you get to be in this building every single night for as long as these two teams are going. I mean, it is really such an incredible time in the city right now.
It's great, man. And as you mentioned, you can't have back-to-back playoff exits, you know, come at the hands of the Devils and the Islanders. So I'm looking forward to watching that. And Ray does, you know, Ray deserves this because he's been a Cowboys fan. And, I mean, watching Dak Prescott throw interception after interception, that can't be good for the mental. So I'm happy for Ray Santiago. And I'm happy for you too, man. It's been fun, I know, for you and Monica McNutt. So I'm looking forward to listening to you guys tomorrow. Call game two of Knicks and Sixers.
We'll be there. I'm looking forward to it. Always great talking with you, Ty.
Sounds good, my man. That is Pat O'Keefe. Make sure you guys check him out. He does a great job. He'll be on the call tomorrow night. Coming up, we're going to talk to Robin Lundberg. Keep this thing going. A whole lot to get to with him. I won't just talk basketball. We'll go everywhere. So keep it locked. Ty Butler going into 12 o'clock right here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Ty Butler Show. On 98.7 ESPN.
Ty Butler, 98.7 ESPN, going till 12 o'clock right here. Hit me up on Twitter, at Ty D. Butler, Instagram as well, 800-919-3776. And right now I get an opportunity to talk to someone I love having conversations with, all things sports. He is the host of the Robin Lundberg Show on YouTube, so make sure you guys check him out. Go hit that subscribe button. He is active every single night, and he joins the show right now. What's up, Robin?
Yo, what up, Ty? How you doing, man?
Yo, I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Quickly, before we get to the hoops. So I'm up late Friday night, and that Drake record drops, and my initial thought was I like it because it's creative. And Drake's doing something that people thought he was afraid to do. And that was challenge Kendrick. Make him come outside, quote unquote. And he's going at him. He's, you know, doing the social media thing where he's really trying to antagonize Kendrick. So I think he's playing as well. I want to get your thoughts on the record and as far as, you know, what Drake has done so far in this battle with K-Dot.
Well, look, I like that he's not afraid. And I like that he's now going straight at Kendrick's head, because you can talk about all these other people ganging up on him and whatnot. He don't have to kill Ross. He don't have to kill Metro. He don't have to kill Future. He don't have to kill any of those dudes. He just needs to kill Kenny. That's his real competitor, right? Like South Park, he needs to kill Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the push-up thing was cool. There was some good line, but it's not really effective to talk about Kendrick's shoe size. That's not really going to stick. The other one, what you call it, tailor-made freestyle or whatever, I'm with you. It was great. Like, the AI stuff has been involved in this battle, so I'll let him pass with the AI stuff. I like the fact that he's like, you know, Kendrick, you're going to be tied up in the apartment trying to come up with these words. Like, you're struggling, all that. Like, I like that he's in the ring. My two beefs with it would be, one, he's almost trying to be-rabbit himself and get in front of allegations of, like, messing around with younger people and stuff, and that's just not something you can – you know, get in front of, I don't believe. I don't know why he brought that up and brought it up in Tupac's voice. And then two, he's saying, Kendrick, you're moving, you know, because of Taylor Swift, and you're not dropping because of Taylor Swift. And then at the end of the song, he says he doesn't drop because of Taylor Swift. Now, ultimately, Kendrick is still ahead in this battle, because as Jay-Z said on, I believe it was Imaginary Players, it's funny how one verse can mess up the game.
Yeah.
And since Like That, everybody's still reacting to Like That.
Mm-hmm.
The potency of it, the directness of it, the energy of it, just how much of a banger it is. It's been at the top of the charts for weeks. And Drake seems like he's really trying to get Kendrick to react fast. And Kendrick's not that kind of artist. He's going to do it on his own time.
But a lot of people are going to, first of all, you're never going to be able to sway Drake fans. And I love Drake, but I mean, his stans are like annoying. I mean, academics can't stop tweeting about him, which is like, it's a sickness. He's got like 20 straight tweets about Drake. But the thing that Drake, I think, is doing that so meticulous is he's playing to the social media crowd. Like, he's doing the memes and he's got the jokes. Kendrick's not on social media. So, you know, that's a large part of the audience as far as, like, the people judging this. And he's also playing on the fact that Kendrick does take long hiatuses. And Drake's outside. Drake put out an album. Drake's on tour. Like, he's inviting him to come outside and play, and Kendrick's not doing it. But I'm interested to see what the response is going to be. There's some rumors he could drop an album next month. And if it's a great diss record, people are not going to care that he wasn't outside. They just want to hear good music.
Well, by the way, it took Drake more time than it's taken Kendrick so far. I mean, Drake's response was there for 2 weeks. And Kendrick's not paying attention to any of this because, like you said, I don't even think he has a cell phone or a smartphone. That is, so, like, he's not going to lose the battle on social media. He's just not. And, you know, the reason he takes time is because whether you like or love or hate any of his particular albums, I think they've all been worthwhile from an interesting standpoint. Like, they all sound different. They all, you could tell there was time and thought and care put into them. So, which I would prefer over Drake making the same album five times in a row.
Yeah, I think that I love Kendrick, but just looking at my generation, if I can do like a self critique of my generation of like hip hop fans, they're too lazy to sit there and analyze bars and like the what he's actually talking about, the content of the album, because sometimes you got to sit there and listen to it a couple times to really grasp what it is that he's talking about. Whereas Drake's songs are going to end up as a caption, and these are hit records being played on the radio because he knows how to appeal to that base. So I think that's what works in his favor. But you know, I'm just curious to see how this is going to play out. It's fun. Kanye all of a sudden is dropping on that Like That remix.
Last Thing Like That is the biggest rap record of the year.
Yeah,
so that's a hit. You know? You know, Kendrick's on a hit record calling out Drake, and I think that's what spawned all of it.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. So let's talk about this Knicks Sixers game yesterday. I don't want to be too reactionary. I don't want to be the talk radio guy, but there's a certain formula that helped me arrive at this conclusion that I think the series is over. Embiid is not going to get healthier as we progress. The Sixers lost the bad Brunson game, and it was the bad Dante DiVincenzo game where Brunson and Dante both went 11 for 36 and scored 30 points. I don't think that's going to happen. And on top of that, speaking of Embiid, him and Maxey combined for 64 points. That, to me, felt like the gotta-have-it game for Philly. And they lost it, so I just don't see that because of health and because of Brunson not being that bad again, I don't see a path to them winning this series. What say you?
I think it's a tight series. I think it could go either way still. I think yesterday's game was decided by the role players, actually. And Maxey was probably, of the stars, the best player on the floor. It'll be interesting to see as the playoffs go forward how much the Knicks don't or do miss Julius Randle, because he's the second guy that can really create. I mean, as good a season as Dante DiVincenzo has had, I'm not sure I have faith in him in the playoffs as a consistent 20-plus per game scorer. But the game was won by, I think the game was held on by Deuce McBride, some of those shots he hit. And I think the game was won by Josh Hart, who hit big shots. And really, if my life was on the line and I needed one guy to get to a loose ball, I might pick Josh Hart. You know, he hustles his tail off out there. And that was what I think decided. I believe the Sixers bench had 7 points. So you're correct in the sense that Embiid is not going to be 100%. I mean, that's clear as day. And, of course, that takes points away from Philly. I think the Sixers are going to be able to overload on Brunson. I'm not so sure he's just going to go off in this series, not any fault of his own, just because of the defensive attention. The question is, will Philly's other players, aside from Embiid and Maxey, be able to put some points on the board, hit some open shots and the like, and how will the Knicks role players continue to shoot? Because I really think we can talk about the stars all we want. I think that's what swung the game yesterday. Guys like Hart and McBride versus the absence of anybody like that on the Philadelphia side.
Do you think because of the injury question surrounding Giannis, no one really believes in the Pacers? Haliburton, you know, he's had a good season, but wasn't the same player post hamstring injury. Do you think that the winner of this series goes to the conference finals?
I think there's a damn good chance. I don't think it's a guarantee. I think the East, really the team that the doors have really opened up for is Boston. more than anybody. As good as Boston was this year, it would be an epic failure if they're not representing the Eastern Conference, forget in the Eastern Conference Finals, but in the NBA Finals. Because Miami's been their toughest opponent, and Miami's cooked because of Jimmy Butler's injury. I mean, that in the first game of the play-in, their season essentially ended, even if they kept it going a little bit longer. Everybody else is kind of a new kid to the block, in a sense, right? Like, and I think are on about the same tier. If Embiid was 100% healthy, you'd probably establish the Sixers as next in that hierarchy, but as we know, he isn't. The Knicks got some, you know, they got their feet in the water last year, so I think they got a chance to do some damage. Milwaukee, you know, the Giannis injury, like you said, you referenced Halliburton, but those back tissue leg injuries linger and they get re-aggravated very easily. I mean, I pulled my calf muscle running in Central Park like 15, 20 years ago, and that thing still ain't healed. You know? So I don't know if Giannis is going to be back for that series at all, right? If he is, it's not toward the end of the series. So, yeah, I mean, I think in the East, you know, the West has a little bit more of a gauntlet, I believe. The East, if there's ever going to be a time when the opportunity arises for a team like the Knicks, it is this season. But I also don't want to go ahead and put them, you know, there yet when they're up 1-0 on Philadelphia in a game that could have gone either way. I mean, I think a lot of these teams are, and that's the NBA nowadays, by the way. We're past the dynastic era, other than maybe Denver being a cut above the rest, where all these teams feel like there's not that much difference between them.
Well, they're chanting, "We want Boston outside the Garden" yesterday. So, I mean, they're already putting.
They gotta stop. I love the passion from Nick, but they gotta stop. Dude, it's too extra all the time. Like after every playoff win, you know, that's the thing that reminds people that they haven't been there before, right? Like, because people act crazy every time they win one game, and then it gets thrown in your face if you don't continue to win. Do it after the series is over. I love the passion. I do love the passion, and I get it's been a long time coming, so I don't want to be too harsh, but it does feel like it's, you know, we see the same script every year. Whenever the Knicks win a playoff game, everybody's out in the street.
Oh, they better win this series, man. Could you imagine they lose this series after that? Robin Lundberg joins us. Make sure y'all subscribe to his show on YouTube. Listen, so I'm watching Lakers Nuggets last night, and the Lakers played as well as you possibly could in that first half, and then were derailed by like silliness in the third quarter. There's like D'Angelo Russell turnovers. There was some offensive rebounds. Denver, you know, took control. Jamal Murray all of a sudden becomes like prime Wade when he plays the Lakers in the playoffs. But I'm watching LeBron's reaction, and you know what it reminded me of? At 2018, that playoff game, game one against the Warriors, a series, you know, he was drawing dead to win, but he had 51-8-8, and then, you know, J.R. Smith loses his mind. He goes to the bench, and he kind of understood in that moment, yeah, that was my chance to you know, make this series interesting. Now we're drawing dead. It felt a little bit like that last night because they were playing well, and then silliness just kind of did them in. What'd you make of that game last night in Denver?
Yeah, I'm with you there. Look, that game LeBron played in 2018 against the Warriors, I know they lost that game. That's the best game I've ever seen anyone play. And, you know, they still lost the game. Obviously, he didn't play to that level last night, but he's still playing at an extremely high level, has become an excellent shooter. And for all the criticism of Anthony Davis, Anthony Davis is still a bona fide top echelon NBA player. The rest of that team, they're not serious. You know, like, attention to detail matters. Right, like little things matter in the playoffs. Basketball is a game of possessions, how you maximize each and every possession. And you got guys like D'Angelo Russell, you mentioned, who take a bad shot. You got a bunch of guys on that team who I just don't think lock in at the level necessary versus the other side of it. You know, Jokic and Murray is just unstoppable. There's nothing you can do with that pairing because Jokic can get wherever he wants on the floor with his size. Murray can navigate into small spots. When those two play off each other and you've got Gordon coming from the dunker spot, you know, you just can't really guard that. But then they got other, you know, KCP, if you recall, he was the third best player, I would say.
On the Lakers team,
On the Lakers 2020 championship team. And he's down the pecking order on Denver. So you just don't have enough guys, I think, from the coaching staff down who are locked in enough on the Lakers and can take it seriously and do what's necessary to win those kind of playoff, those tight games, possession by possession, especially, you know, it's what they could get away with it maybe against one of these other teams, but not against the Nuggets.
Who do you think's their biggest challenger?
Minnesota.
Really? Because I was just going to ask you, Anthony Edwards, I thought he was the biggest winner yesterday. It was fun, man. You want to see him trash-talking KD and Booker. He went off for 33, 9-6, I believe it was, in a win at home. And, you know, he's kind of getting that recognition because Ja didn't want it and Zion didn't want it. But, you know, we need a face of the league. And, you know, we can talk about Giannis and Jokic and all these guys. But Anthony Edwards was, you know, a staple in that conversation. And that was just a fun game yesterday. He wanted it. And he took it to the Suns.
Yeah. And you know, they've sort of flirted with the playoffs the last several years. So they've gotten a little experience there. And then they've got other guys. You know, Kat is a real player. Gobert, whatever you mean, people like to make fun of him, but he's a real player. He's been around the block. Daniel's a real player. That size. Then you got Edwards, obviously, on the wing and is the shot creator. I think they have the talent from a roster standpoint, and I think they've gotten enough experience where it's not all brand new to them. Like, it's interesting to see, like, let's say, how the Thunder do, because this is really their first rodeo. Minnesota, I think, is the biggest threat. To
they're just goofy, man. Cat is like, this is like one of the reasons why, you know, he's going to be flirted around in trade rumors once their season ends, you know, him coming to the Knicks. He's goofy, man. We're not that far removed from him. His coach had to rip them because they prioritized him scoring 70 points over them actually winning the damn game.
Yeah, I mean, a regular season, but, you know, like, look, the other thing about him is, though, he might be goofy, and you're right, but he's also a knockdown shooter for a big. And before Anthony Edwards, you know, rose up, you thought of him as their franchise player. So, you know, from a talent standpoint, they've got three or four guys who are bona fide, you know, NBA caliber players, all NBA caliber players.
All right, Robin. So what you got cooking for your show this week on YouTube? Want people to check you out.
Dog, I might be on the Caitlin Clark beat from now on. I don't, like, I've seen the numbers go up. You talk about the face of the league. He's the face of basketball, man. I got a reel on Facebook right now. It's got 400,000 views talking about her. My show, which I focused on her because all the news last week, did better than it's ever done before. I don't know, man. I mean, I hit up all the hip-hop stuff and the pro wrestling stuff, too. Like, that's all my bag. But and obviously the NBA. But, yeah, I, if you're into that story, I'm not. I see these returns. I'm not sure I'm gonna, like, shy away from them.
Yeah, you got to play. See, it's funny how it happens, man. You got to beat Drake and play the hits if the numbers are coming. So what's going on? What was your take on the Caitlin Clark thing?
But I just don't understand why everybody's pretending like they don't get why she's getting all the attention, right? Like, and this is no disrespect to the women who have come before. I was a fan of Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird and the like, but everybody just showed up to the women's basketball discussion at the same time. None of these people who are crying about, like, the lack of shoe deals or a lack of coverage were there before. Like, where were you before? Were you buying the shoes? Were you talking about this before? Or were you saying the WNBA wasn't popular? I mean, if you look at the numbers, dude, Caitlin Clark, the women's national championship game had 4 million more viewers than the men's national championship game. If you had told me that in the past, I would have told you were insane. They're moving the venues for her road games to accommodate more fans. Washington went to where the Wizards play to get 16,000 more people in the building. The prices have more than doubled for the tickets. They put all of her games on national TV. The WNBA drafted better ratings than the last six WNBA drafts combined. You know, and she was on Saturday Night Live ahead of the WNBA draft. Of course, because she's the one that's got the juice. That's the reason she got the Nike deal, because she is the one drawing. Even Dawn Staley, who was the coach of South Carolina. And South Carolina's a great team. They earned it. You know, and Asia Wilson's a great player. No one is disputing any of those things. But the attention is because of Caitlin Clark, and everybody's pretending like that's not the reality, or there's other nefarious things at play.
There's a lot of intellectual dishonesty that permeates, you know, social media and just media in general, which is, look, I commend you for using your platform to highlight that stuff. But, you know, sometimes the simple answer is just people are dumb.
Let's just be honest. People are dumb, man. We know
another
that.
Day, another dumbass is what I say sometimes.
Robin, man, it's always fun talking to you, bro. We're definitely going to do this again, you know, as we progress through the playoffs. It's going to be fun chopping it up with you. And I'm rooting for you, man, the YouTube show. Get that popping off. And hopefully I can join you at some point.
Yeah, but come on this week, man. You're always welcome.
All right, let's do it. That's Robin Lundberg. Have a good one, my man. Robin Lundberg, the Robin Lundberg Show. Check him out on YouTube. Does a fantastic job. He was the reason why my voice was ever heard on this station. He had his morning show, and he did something really cool that was called Fanalist Friday. So him and RJ were giving fans a chance to come in and co-host the show, and I was able to do that one time. And back in, what was that, 2014? So, yeah, man, I'm always going to have love for Robin Lundberg. All right, final hour of the show coming up. We're going to hit everything. Ty Butler going until noon right here on 98.7 ESPN.